Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast, brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am Paul David, one of your co-hosts.
And I'm your co-host, Maya Darren-Paul Hornby.
Today, we're talking about unlocking academic success with online tutoring with Rishabh Shah, CEO of OneHive. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you.
So OneHive is a learning ecosystem that supports organizations to deliver effective, personalized learning. Something near and dear to my heart as a former teacher who tried to deliver personalized learning to a classroom full of students. So I really feel what you're going through there. Before taking on the CEO position at OneHive, Rishabh led TutorHive, the first hive that connects students with tutors and study groups based on their personality and learning style. I love that. By providing better value for students, TutorHive facilitates academic success for all students, regardless of socioeconomic background. That is so near to my heart. One of my former favorite jobs was working in the New York City Department of Education, designing new high schools for Black and Brown students who were not being well served by the system. So we're going to talk about
that. We'll get to that. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
So ultimately, you're committed to unlocking the potential of every learner, and educators and businesses have delivered 7,200 plus lessons on your platform. So you haven't always been in edtech. You've enjoyed many roles across automobile engineering until a gear shift led you to founding Portobello Vintage Market, an online vintage clothing brand designed to combat fast fashion's role in environmental destruction, a cause that your newly launched Hydrogen Hive also addresses. So welcome to the pod, Rishabh.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here.
Watch us have me.
So OneHive describes itself as bringing together several educational platforms under a single ecosystem. Could you share the vision behind OneHive and how it differentiates itself in such a crowded edtech market?
Yeah, so the biggest problem within education tech is we think of it as separate sections. You've got early years, K-12, higher ed, early careers, you know, corporate. Life isn't so segregated. And when you have one solution, that doesn't help you bridge the gap. You see what happens right now where loads of people fall between the cracks, especially at changes of transition. And that's where we decided to make a difference. So OneHive is a lifelong learning platform. Now, my business plan is 20 years long, right? Because it takes 20 years to get out of school through to university or higher education and apprenticeship scheme, and then into the real world. Mm-hmm. So through that time, there's a lot that can be understood about an individual. You know, we all change a lot, we evolve, we grow, you know, we develop, we pick up skills, we drop skills, we pick up new hobbies and habits, change friends. And so within that, we thought we would try and understand the individual's personality as it changes. So if I know your educational background, you know, what you've learned, what do you know, along with your enrichment, so what do you like doing? If you like playing a sport, if you like dancing, if you like singing, theater, whatever it may be, that makes you you. All of a sudden, you've got a lot about the individual. As they then enter the workplace, then we learn their experience. What have you done? So what you know, what you like doing, and what have you done? We're not that far away from helping the individual find their ikigai, their meaning, their purpose. And I think that is the core that differentiates us between any other platform, ecosystem, solution that's out there. It's actually serving the learner as opposed to just giving the learner more stuff to learn.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Like leveraging data to make the learner more legible to themselves.
This one really resonates with me. I'm actually, after this pod, headed to Oxford to like a program for small business owners at the Said Business School there. And some of the stuff we're learning, I'm just like, I made it into my 30s. I've been running a business for like 5 years now. I've run nonprofit organizations in the past. Like, how am I still, you know, like, how have I not learned this stuff before? Or like, and it just like kind of shows like the winding journey that most people take as lifelong learners to figure out the skills and mindsets and resources that they need to do what they want to do with their lives. And so I'm grateful for it, but I'm also kind of like really interested in why this hasn't come earlier in my educational journey, you know, in a lot of ways.
Do you know, I think there's three types of learning though. So I don't know, I think back to the corporate world, trying to work out to do a timesheet. I just ask someone to tell me, hey, just tell me the answer. It's not value add, right? Yeah. So they just tell me the answer and I'll learn it. Almost that rote learning approach.
Yep.
The other one is I would read about it and I'd learn it. So my degree in engineering was all about, you know, learn all this stuff and then work out how the hell you apply it. And then the third one is me trying myself. So, you know, it's real, like, try and fail. And that's kind of that story of unless you've actually given it a proper deep go, you won't learn it. So learning through your own experience. So there's three different types, but I think that's kind of why often we reach for the easy answer.
Yeah.
We don't force ourselves to learn, especially after school.
Are there any ways in which One Hive uses its own product to help itself learn? And have you used it across your sort of entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah. So we had this interesting point where, I suppose I'll start with those two questions. So the first one is in and around how we get our team to learn and develop.
Yeah.
So a lot of it, we're amassing lots of content, bringing lots of experts in. We are leveraging that. We have to, we need our team to be on the ball. So we use the system ourselves to learn internally. So, you know, once a week we started this initiative where the team would share something of value, of interest. It might be the fact that, you know, the rules of rugby, right? Or something, whatever they care about, whatever they're passionate about.
Right.
And we'll deliver it to the rest of the team, just teach them a little bit about a thing. So apart from building culture, it builds that knowledge and development, learning and development mindset, growth mindset within the team. I think the whole personalized approach to and just doing it is probably more relevant. And that's where so the reason I started the Vintage Clothing Company was because I was flipping the coin between doing an MBA or just starting a company and doing
it. Right.
And I went brute force and let's just roll the dice and see what happens.
What's a better MBA than actually starting a company? I resonate with that a lot. Yeah.
My rationale was I don't want to do an MBA just to learn how to write a P&L.
Yeah, fair.
Like there's better uses of that time. Mm-hmm. So I just attributed, you know, the cost of an MBA at the time to then say, let me just put that into mistakes.
Yeah, interesting.
So I'm going to invest in me failing. And that's my safety net, you know, however, 10, 20 grand, whatever it is, such that when I do get to the point I do an MBA, which I know I will at some point, it'll be more about the reflective piece. I've got some lived experience to refer back to, which for me works better. I learn by doing. I learn by applying it to the real world. Mm-hmm. And which is ultimately how our system's geared.
Yeah, that really resonates with me because I've been like flirting with the idea of maybe going for like an MBA and like looking at like part-time programs. Now I'm like dipping my toe in with this Oxford program and kind of like, okay, like can I like just like window shop and peek around the edges of an MBA? Because I'm finding places in my practice as a business leader where like, oh, you could sharpen this, you can improve this. Do I need a full MBA? I'm not really sure yet, but yeah. Want to pull back and talk about like the global ed tech market. It's projected to reach over 400 billion by 2025. Very, very exciting. Obviously there's been like ups and downs, peaks and troughs over the past few years. Would love to understand how One Hive is planning to like leverage this growth in the market or this shift in the market and kind of what role you see One Hive playing in shaping the future of personalized learning.
Yeah, so we're at this point of inflection where AI's kind of taken storm. So now everything in the edtech market isn't, oh, we do this and AI. It's an AI and right. it's well and truly, there are things that just need to be solved.
Yeah.
So an example, one of our partners, clients, Generating Genius, they are a STEM-based charity. They deliver learning and development, career development, and mentorship for 600 kids. They're trying to scale up to 6,000.
Wow.
Their problem they're trying to solve is how do we streamline and put in some digital infrastructure to enable that? We can't hire more people. I can't 10x my staff. I need to put something in to streamline processes and enable that. And that's the type of example where there are so many problems to be solved at a grassroots level. And actually the opportunities are endless. I think the growth in the market is probably, you know, it's an interesting one because 400 billion sounds like a lot, but there are way more people in the world.
Yeah.
Everyone's spending a huge amount on learning, development, and education. It's an unlimited market. Yeah. So what we're seeing in that sort of dynamic of growth and shrinking off the market or like bear and bull is that it's always constant and education is really attractive and sexy to PE. Private equity love education and they will chuck huge amounts of money into it. Early stage less so. And I think there's something to be said in that dynamic and that challenge or the opportunity to go and find where your niche is. And that's what One Hive is starting to do. So the reason we pivoted from a tutoring platform to then licensing the system out is we recognize there is a gap in personalized learning. And as data becomes better, operations become better, like AI becomes better, we can wield those tools, but we're gathering the data first. So without the data, you can't personalize anything.
Does the data then prove to the investor like that you're like your sort of traction, your use case and things like that?
Exactly. It has to. It's got to be data led. If you're going to create ed tech, it's got to be data led. So, you know, it's more important to understand that in a safe, secure, but, you know, meaningful way, because education data is quite sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you also then have something you can leverage.
Yeah.
Coming out and saying, I've got the next AI tool that will personalize maths to you is great, fantastic. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to help unless you know about the individual.
Yeah.
And you understand them over a duration of time.
How many tutors can you feasibly, you know, deploy to folks? And so, it, you know, what element does AI and automation and sort of digital learning add to that? Mm. I think it's really interesting.
And connectedly, is that why education is so attractive to PE? Because there is a sort of unlimited market of customers for it.
Mm.
Exactly. But also it is a relatively simple model,
mm-hmm.
right?
In what way?
In terms of people come in.
Yeah.
They need learning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That gets delivered to them.
Yeah, yeah,
off
yeah.
they go.
The metrics are quite...
It's a really simple model. And PE likes simple. Buy a property, rent it out. Great.
Yeah.
Mm. Whereas education, when you take a step back, it's interesting because it's quite a complex environment where you've got public-private funding challenges. You've got dynamics. You've got a curriculum that's potentially not fit. Well, not potentially. It's definitely not fit for purpose for today's day and age. You've got challenges every single part of the way,
mm-hmm.
yet it's still deemed one of the most attractive investment propositions within PE.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything what you said too about their, like, education is sexy to PE, to investors, early stage less so? What does that do to the market? Like, what, in terms of like reaching an escape velocity and having to prove yourself early stage with not a lot of funding, and then you get to a point where people are really interested in you because you've proven yourself, like, walk us through that, I guess.
So I think it's a tough journey.
Mm.
But the thing is, no one's in education to make a quick buck. You're not here to cash out.
Yeah, that's, exactly.
You know, I go into investment banking, make my money, and then off I go, right? That's where, you know, if you really want it. So you're doing it to drive an internal and intrinsic desire to want to do good.
Right.
And I think that's what makes EdTech so exciting, mm-hmm. even through that journey, is because you're dealing with, you know, the people who get involved with EdTech companies, even your team, your founding team, your first few hires, they're there to want to make an impact.
Yep.
So it's less about the fundraising and, you know, and when you've got a way to make it easy for angel investors, mm-hmm. it's okay.
Because mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. everyone gets education because it's simple. You know, your kids need tutoring.
Yep.
Your school cannot invest in blockchain education for your kids. We've got a solution for that. You know, you can provide that.
Mm.
That it can be relatable.
Mm-hmm.
However, when it comes to sort of when you're looking at 10x multipliers and you've got to scale your industry, your GTM, your go-to-market's got to be, you know, scaling XXX like every month.
Yeah.
You're like, well, you know, things in education move a lot slower.
Yeah.
And you have to be appreciative of that. You can't force a play to grow a new market when it doesn't make sense. And we've seen like loads of companies go to the US to die.
Yeah.
In the edtech space in particular.
That's a great point.
But it's a tough market to scale, and that's not where it's needed.
Yeah.
When you look at the other regions globally.
my experience as an educator in the US is that the edtech scene felt very supply side. Like a lot of, you know, very smart, you know, kind people who maybe they made their money in like finance or some other sector, not education, would dream up a thing and maybe they might, like, you know, do some research and maybe a little bit of testing, but they weren't like genuinely co-designing solutions with me as an educator per se. And so it just felt like these solutions were like dropped into schools by like my principal or some like consultant or something like that, and like not exactly tailored, to your point about personalized learning, to what I was facing in the classroom, you know. So that's what I appreciate about, like, you know, work that you're doing to personalize the learning and like connect it to a tutor who really knows an individual student and like their special learning style and needs and things like that. So,
and in terms of data evidencing that personalized learning has shown promise for improving educational outcomes, and I think what you're particularly interested in, as are we, in terms of stamping out root problems that affect educational equity, would you be able to just make the case for personalized learning?
Okay. Let's go real simple. And I'm going to take it away from like school.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make it, let's say I want to learn how to invest and I like football. If you talk to me about, you know, Manchester United and their assets, liabilities, their debt, their investments, their growth strategy, their business plan, all of that, I'm interested. If you talk to me about GlaxoSmithKline and Rio Tinto,
less so.
Yawn. right? I'm not engaged. So with that example alone that everyone can understand, all of a sudden you're in a position where if a kid is struggling with mathematics and they like baking, show them how to scale recipes. That's fractions, ratios, algebra, done, right? Let's not force every kid down the same route. The same with if you shortchange a kid who's from a disadvantaged background and is on the breadline, they will know when you don't give them the right amount of change.
Mm-hmm.
Give them the exact same sum in a classroom, they won't be able to get it.
Right.
It's all about experience, making things relevant and meeting individuals where they're at to then teach and educate. So now that's the plea. Now, data and backing it up is really important. Mm. So for us, the key metric is, does the teacher and the student get on? That's the first thing that we can impact. So we use, you know, the personality, the hobbies, the interest, the sector, the educational background, every tool that we can to find the best individual to educate the learner, regardless if it's at school, mm-hmm. in higher education, in a startup accelerator, in the corporate setting. And that's what we found has driven a 93% first-time match success rate. Wow. Over 1,300 users.
Wow.
Now that's the data point we're like, and we've measured that based on two or more sessions that they've had successfully and continued rolling out. So that's AI. That's where we use this magic little box, which is all about trying to understand the individual, what their needs are and what someone can provide, and then being that layer to start to match. The second one is then retention. So this is driven more so from the tutoring example where a student will come back. Mm-hmm. We've seen success rates of 86% of retention of students coming back for more than just that subject they're learning because mm-hmm. the approach of matching has been so successful. We've seen parents who've come back and said, you know, I've told all my crying parent friends about you because they're struggling because school started and their kids are failing again.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, all the narrative and the data points, like, you know, you're creating the right impact. You've got a scalable solution. We've got 200 plus tutors on our platform. We're supporting charities scale from 600 to 6,000. Hedge funds deal with their graduates and their intake. We're looking at solutions to help some of the biggest companies in the UK support the well-being and, you know, the retention of talent through a more engaging, personalized approach to learning and development. Now that is the data points that we want to look at and how we think, you know, personalized learning is the solution to helping overcome that gap. And we have got a gap.
Yeah. And how much of this is sort of like addressing, you know, failings in the existing system? And I'm sure that's like a delicate balance that you walk in terms of like you want to cooperate with parents and schools and yeah. things like that. But like, yeah, like what is your sort of assessment of like what's happening in schools right now and what you're providing as like an augment, a supplement? Just really curious about that yeah. perspective.
And I have to be really careful because I had this discussion yeah. the other day with the chair of our board.
Yeah.
And my stance was the education system's failing. He was like, you're in one of the best educated countries in the world. What is wrong with you? I was like, hey, good point.
Yeah, yeah, fair.
Like, you know, we think we've got it tough here. And, you know, there are challenges naturally as any system, any large organization will have challenges.
Yeah.
But it could be a hell of a lot worse.
But like with statements like that, like finish the statement, right? Like failing at what? Or like, isn't it reframe?
Yeah.
Like so, it's succeeding at the thing it was set up for. Like, you know,
yeah.
I mean? Like
a different. So I think the system was geared up to get lots of people educated in the same thing in a world that was very predictable.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that's predictable today is that things will change.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they are changing at a rate of knots.
Mm.
You know, we can see how quickly a global event causes a massive spark yeah. and change everything from George Floyd through to one hurricane. Mm-hmm. The footfall or the outcomes of these events are global by nature. Yeah. COVID, the pandemic, one thing can spark a global change. And what we need to do in a system that does need to teach adaptability, that's where things like entrepreneurial schools should be more core. Understanding how finances work should be more core. Understanding the technologies of tomorrow, because those are the jobs that are going to be available tomorrow, should be more core. So it does rely on a slightly more adaptable, a more open to change approach. And I think that's the biggest challenge at not only the UK system, but a global education system, which is then causing more parents to want to pull their kids out and home educate. Yeah. it's causing these shifts and changes in mental health for kids who just don't feel like they're doing anything of value. For example, kids who are just not in the, who've just left school or leave because they don't fit in, have a special educational need. There's not enough schools with SEN capabilities again.
And how to like be okay. You know what I mean? Like just to like, you know, like, hey, like this crazy thing, as you said, happened around the world. Like, how do I process that? How do I think about that? How do I, you know, like maintain mental stability and do the thing I need to do? Yeah. I think is massively undercharted.
Is there sort of a psychosocial element in OneHive's platform?
Yes. So when we look at that whole understanding an individual, the trends, the analysis that we're starting to be able to do, and it's by no means mature. It's something that we're developing and building out. It's starting to look at trends and groups and understanding, okay, does someone start to flag potential risks or opportunities? So, I mean, from my point of view, I would love to be in a position where the platform is rolled out and we can start to use data to enhance the inadequacies and some of the extra provisions that are provided to the kids who are foster care leavers, for example, who naturally have other additional challenges. If you're on free school meals right now, you're 3.7 times more likely to be on out-of-work benefits by the time you get to 27. So that's the government budgeting $2 billion in spend. So can you start to recognize some of these more connected overlays and then say, okay, cool, we're going to help this closer up source. So psychosocial becomes more about how do we integrate where someone is right now to where we want to get them to in society and how do they interact and react to it. And I think that's where you can start to bring things together. And that's what we're working on.
Want to ask the requisite growth strategy question. And, you know, we are branding and sort of growth strategy agency. You all have recently launched Hydrogen Hive, which is really interesting. And we want to understand like how with that launch, you plan to kind of scale your operations. What are some of like the key strategies that you're implementing to ensure that there's, you know, sustained growth across all of the Hive Corporation businesses?
Yeah, so we started with Tutor Hive. The idea was we've built a platform that is truly scalable and it helps organizations deliver personalized learning at scale. So the best way I described it to someone the other day was when you've got a Formula One team, and if you're not into Formula One, just stay with me because this will make sense. You've got teams that make engines and teams that make the cars, and some teams like Mercedes or Ferrari make both the engine and the car. So when I have the engine, I can put it in another car and they'll be okay. It will do well. It's a really good engine. But when you put it in your own car, it will work a lot better. And that's where things like Hydrogen Hive and us running Tutor Hive become more interesting, because we are using our own system in a considered way in a market that we know really needs it. So within the hydrogen sector, something like $570 billion is committed capital into projects globally over the next 6 years. Yet 46% of companies are flagging that they haven't got sufficient talent to support the programs, the initiatives they've got ongoing. There's a massive workforce demand need. And so—
And is that why you chose hydrogen? Like, because you saw that demand deficit?
Correct.
Okay, yeah,
I
got you.
Like, I would argue that things like blockchain are a little bit more advanced.
Interesting.
It's more widely known. But if you ask the average individual about, do you know anything about hydrogen? They'll look at you and say, have you seen the Hindenburg? It's explosive. No, it won't work. So yet you've got big petrochemical companies investing billions into it. I think in the UK, Scottish Power have got a $2 billion fund to put into any project in the UK to develop hydrogen programs. They've got $150 million invested into Felixstowe Port to supply the port with hydrogen. So hydrogen is an interesting vector which has got a need from a K-12, a school point of view. You know, we need to build the next layer of talent. We also need to help surface those who are experts and have had experience in this. It's not many globally. So the opportunity is to say, well, and the growth strategy in here is ultimately, look, there's not that much content out there. There's not that much insight in there. That's not being given to people who, in a way that's accessible. Here's a big land change, right? It's almost at the scale of when the horse-drawn cart got replaced by cars. And those cars were fueled by petrol. Now just think about that. You're in a world where you've got horses, carts, you know, bridleways. All of a sudden, this four-wheeled thing that's made with metal and wood fills up and can just go endlessly without feeding it carrots. So all of a sudden, things change massively. And that's the level of change we are facing, mm-hmm. albeit it's slightly more sheltered because it's heavy industries. Mm-hmm. So your maritime, your sectors such as like shipping and freight, mining, the heavy sectors that ultimately power the world that a lot of us don't understand mm-hmm. and just happen, that's where the growth is really being driven. So our play is interesting, and the growth strategy in this is, you know, can we start to support the infrastructure mm-hmm. from a learning point of view? Can we signpost? Can we bring people to the hive to learn about hydrogen, regardless of what sector you're in? If you're a lawyer, a legislator, an insurance broker, you know, all these, a financier, you know, even a school teacher, they all need to learn about it. I can give you an example. Yeah. South Australian government in Adelaide are going to hit net zero by 2027.
Wow.
Because of hydrogen.
Okay.
But their biggest export is mining for iron ore, hematite, magnetite. So they've managed it. Or they're 2 years away, three years away from reaching net zero. Now, right. Their intellectual property is the fact that they've done it. But no one really knows that's happening.
Wow.
So when you consider other governments, policymakers, legislators, insurance companies that currently don't insure hydrogen trucks, there's 500 million trucks globally.
I see.
There's a massive market for it.
Yeah.
And the buyers are those who need to get educated to play in this new sector.
So in order for like the South Adelaide government to be able to reach net zero, there needs to be an infrastructure in place, as you're saying, with like vehicles, insurance, like law, all that stuff, so that they can enact that change. But they're limited because that infrastructure isn't quite there yet.
Well, no, they're on their way.
They're on their way. Okay.
Yeah. They're the halo. They're the example.
Policymakers are limited to sort of follow their footsteps.
Yeah.
There's no interconnected ecosystem to learn from.
Interesting.
Because they're best in class, but they've got no way to export their talent and their knowledge. Nor that's not their business. Whereas if we could share that and halo that, all of a sudden, if you're in the Andes and you're running a truck company, you're trying to go net zero and use hydrogen, you could connect with someone in France who has done it in the Alps. You still got high altitude problems, you got cold temperature challenges, but you can leverage and learn. And with a sector where it takes 20 years to build any sort of real infrastructure, we haven't got the time. 2050 is not that far away.
So then are the buyers then, like, for example, like the state government in Australia, are the buyers school systems? Are they industry that wants to fund this? Like how is Hydrogen Hive, you know, basically funded, and how do you?
So to start with, it's the organizations that have got content and want to share that.
Okay.
You know, you pay huge amounts of money to go to a conference. Yep. A large consultancy would pay to sponsor a conference.
Yep.
And they might find some business as a result of it.
Yep. Yep.
If you've got IP and talent and expertise, we'll start by helping you share that.
Okay.
Once you've shared it, then all of a sudden people are coming to the hive to consume the content, and you will generate revenue as a result. So it's more an investment by your organizations who have completed it or done something of value.
Yeah.
Say, okay, great. But that's not enough, because if you can't convince a legislator,
yeah.
or if you can't convince someone at a bank to give you the funding, that's not going to scale.
Yeah. Seems like a huge investment in content. Like, and we love that we're a content strategy agency, but like, are you developing content then for your buyers to kind of entice them on the sales side, but also within the hive, like, and for educational and sort of learning purposes as well?
Yeah. And a lot of content's already created.
Okay.
It's just all over the place.
Yeah. Just organizing it.
It's structuring content is more of the challenge than creating content. I mean, like you guys know, right? You can use ChatGPT to create content. I can get Morgan Freeman or Neil deGrasse Tyson to teach me about hydrogen on the fly, just like that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So content's no longer the problem. It's structuring it, verifying it, make sure it's factually correct.
Yep.
Those are the challenges that we need to face and overcome.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And talking about content overload leads me nicely onto my question about your A-level LinkedIn results post. Yours stood out of, you know, the classic barrage of them on that sort of second week in August. And in yours, you spoke about Asian families placing a particular level of expectation for academic success on their children. Would you be able to explain what you wrote to our listeners and maybe talk about what inspired you to write the post?
Yeah. So being a sort of the first generation born in the UK, my parents, you know, worked incredibly hard to make sure I went to a good school. Education was always deemed core, right? And, you know, I think it's a great thing. You know, education unlocks so much potential, short, medium, long term. And that constant learning is important. And that's something that's been ingrained in a South Asian culture, the South Asian immigrant culture, where they, you know, they move from India to the East Coast of Africa, which is what my journey was, my parents' journey. They then, you know, they valued that. So good or bad, when you don't perform in what is deemed the most important metric, you feel like the world wants to swallow you up. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the reason why I was motivated to write the post and share my story this year was because I felt I had a voice. You know, we've built the brand, we've built the business, people listen to what we're saying. Mm-hmm. So if I can then help a parent understand what their kids might be going through, and especially now when the exams are not as easy to pass as they arguably were, or people have failed and it feels like the world will swallow you up, it's a challenging position that, you know, parents are in, kids are in, because, you know, you're like, especially at A levels, it's what do I do next, especially when it's everything hinges upon university. Things are different now. Mm-hmm. University may not be the only solution. Mm-hmm. There are all sorts of alternatives. I mean, it just goes to show that my journey, you know, led me to a point where I'm actually glad I didn't get my first choice university. And that sort of conversational type blog I put out was more around the fact that, you know, no matter what happens, things will work out provided you've got the right mindset and the right approach. Mm. And that's what I wanted to get across to the parents, especially on LinkedIn. Yeah. It didn't belong to teach. It's not there to teach kids. It's actually for the parents. And that journey of, if you can take that adversity, support the child in that journey. I ended up at Warwick to read mechanical engineering, ended up with a first degree, a year in industry. I've worked at Formula One teams. You know, I've led the digital strategy for an engineering consultancy, spoke at conferences globally. I would by no means say that their A-levels defined any of that, except maybe a chip on the shoulder. Mm. But apart from that...
And what was the reception? Like, how did it land? Do you think you got through to some parents? Do you think you, you know, helped some young people feel a bit better? Like,
yeah, and for me, I love to practice what I preach. Mm. So we actually had a couple of students do some work experience with us over summer.
Wow.
Now, as a startup, you're like, why would you bother? You know, it feels like such a faff, like, to deal with that. And actually, one of the students performed really well. She's in her final year of university. Mm-hmm. And her mum messaged me literally this morning because I sent a letter to her to say, like, well done on your journey. Like, just shared a bit of my experiences working with her. Just gave her some really positive feedback. Yeah. She was like, no CEO ever does that. And I was like, well, you know, I've got to practice what I preach.
We like to sort of close with, like, some fun questions. We ask you to keep your answers quick. They're quick fire questions. So, like, the first thing that comes to mind, just go with what's in your gut there.
All right.
Just a way for us to get to know you a little bit better and for our audience to learn about you there. First question, if you could start another tech startup, what would it be and why?
Ooh.
Surely something to do with cars.
Yeah, that's kind of where I've gone. I think something like autonomous vehicles.
Okay, sick. Autonomous vehicles. We like that. We like that.
What tech invention makes you the most excited right now?
Starlink.
Ooh.
I think the fact it's connected to Africa.
Yeah.
That massive digital enabler. Unreal.
What tech invention makes you the most scared?
Ooh. Biohacking, genome stuff.
Who is a literal human, little L, little H, who's been integral to your career journey?
So that's going to be my DT teacher. So my product design teacher, and I spent the half term before Easter. So my project was, well, I'm going to go into this a little bit, if that's okay. Yeah. But my project was to build a ramp to get kids with disabilities in and out of a swimming pool. And there was a holiday camp happening that Easter in my final A-level year. So I was like, right, cool. We went through the first round of testing and there were a few mishaps, as you could imagine, when we ran it through using some of the rugby team. We were trying to get the system working. Mm-hmm. So we spent every day of half term working on the system to get it working, to the point where we got a kid who's called Paddy. He weighed 130 kilos. He's got Duchenne muscular dystrophy. So every single bit of muscle turns to fat.
Wow.
Wheelchair bound. And his mum told me that he loves going swimming. So I was like, cool, we're going to make sure this is ready. So that journey of product development, product testing, engineering, overcoming adversity, just getting it done, ultimately was a big underlying part of why I am where I am and who I am.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. Great answer.
And the importance of sort of building a product or a service with a person in mind to help.
Yeah. Yeah, your ideal customer persona, right? And the impact it has. The other bit was also, it was a social impact technically. I didn't brand it as that. I just wanted to get this kid in the swimming pool because he loves swimming.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
He's stuck in a wheelchair all day. What else do you want to do? I want to get out of my wheelchair, right? And then when he was in the water, he was free.
Mm-hmm. We have the pleasure of interviewing, you know, founders like yourself, and like we're always blown away by like the simplicity of the solutions. It's just like, yeah, we need to do this thing and move this person into this thing. It's like when you start from that, like a human-centric approach, I think it just like makes such better products and things like that. So last question, what's an inspirational quote that stuck with you through your journey in tech?
Ooh, ship a crap product. Shipping a product that is too perfect, it's never going to be perfect. And for us has been a hard learning journey, because we've tried to craft something and then we're like, actually, no, we should get it out there. And it's this constant battle of constantly producing and shipping quickly. So I think it was a conversation I had with a very successful exited founder. And he was like, no, just get out of your own, just ship it. Doesn't matter.
I think that's very well said. So cool. I think that wraps us up for today. This has been an awesome conversation about kind of re-engineering the education system and unlocking academic success with online tutoring with Rishab Shah, the CEO of OneHive. Check out OneHive, check out TutorHive and HydrogenHive, all the hives. Where can folks find out more about what you're doing on the interwebs?
Yeah, so it's onehive.ai, tutorhive.co.uk, and then LinkedIn. Find us through there, Rishab Shah, or just connect with us. That we are here to serve you. You know, we're trying to help unlock that potential, that learning journey. So just reach out to us and we'll be here to connect.
That's amazing. And thank you so much for coming down to the studio today. It's always great to have, you know, folks in person talk about their passions and their products. And yeah, this has been another great episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast, brought to you by Literal Humans. Please don't forget to give us a review if you like the episode. Give us hopefully 5 stars so we can bring on more great folks like Rishab. And see y'all next week. Bye.
Thank you.